It can be hard for us to grasp what we are doing here. Not only are some of the things shrouded in things that don't make sense to us, but also the very fact of the history behind what we do is sometimes lost if we're not familiar with a lot of the Jewish traditions. So in a basic sense, what we're doing right now is we're following in the footsteps of Jesus. We're watching where he went. We're listening to his words. We're reflecting on what he did and trying to cultivate the mysteries in our lives. But to really grasp what's going on, we have to really understand Jewish history, namely the Passover. Because there's so much about the Passover that's in the backdrop of what we celebrate that only makes sense when we put the things in their proper context, and then we can see what's really happening today. So from the first start, Passover is divided into four chunks, which are represented by four glasses of wine. At the first one, the father of the household will take a glass and he will fill it with wine, and then he begins the first part of the Passover rite, in which between him and his eldest son, or usually eldest son, they begin a dialogue. The dialogue is written in scripture itself, but it's also codified in the way the Jews celebrate Passover. The dialogue is a discussion between the father and his son about why we're doing this. Why are we here? Why are we celebrating Passover? With a very simple answer of, we're doing it because God saved us from Egypt, he established a covenant with us, and now we're remembering that moment, that pivotal moment that made us Jewish, that pivotal moment that gave us freedom, that pivotal moment in which we recognize that this is our God. And so the son will ask, like, why are we doing this? This seems silly. And the father will respond in this nice little dialogue. For us, though, that just sounds like a fun historical lesson. But the reality is, this is just as much present now as it was for them. Because we start the Mass in the very same way. We hear our story. The story of what God's people have done since the beginning. Each and every Mass, we reflect on that very central reality. God is present. He is our God. He established a covenant with us, a relationship, a way of recognizing the blessings that flow and giving us an obligation. In the same way, as we hear our story, it's easy for us to dismiss it, to think of it as something of far away history, something that doesn't relate now. It's not present. It's not tangible. We can't feel it. But let me give you an example of how we can relate to it. Imagine we discovered an ancestor from our family tree way back when. And after doing some research, some genealogy, some history, we uncover a story of this person, something they did. And as we read the story of this person, it's not as though it's some fictitious event, as though we're reading a history book. It becomes present, becomes real for us. And it's only real because this person feels real as one of my ancestors. And so the story takes on a new character, has a new feeling, a new expression. It's like, oh, this is part of me. That's the same way the Jewish people understood the events of Passover. This isn't just something God did in the past. This is my story. This is my history. This is my relationship with God. And that's where we start out today. We start out by realizing the events of Jesus' life, the very Passover itself, is not just this thing of the past. It's our story. We are part of this very great tradition. We are part of these people who have celebrated this very same event for nearly 2,000 years, unfailingly bringing it down to us. These people who encountered the living Jesus, heard him speak, watched him do things, were there present when the miracles were performed, saw him rise from the dead. And so we too are here as he performs miracles. We're here as he's present to us. We're here as he rises from the dead. We're here watching as he washes his disciples' feet. We're here as he breaks the bread, pours the wine, and says, here, take this, all of you, eat and drink. This is my body and blood. The story must be real for us. It must be present. After the first cup is finished and the story and dialogue have ended, then the father will pour a second cup of wine, starting the second part of the Passover feast. At this point, they have a great grand meal because it's a feast. It's a celebration. You eat at celebrations. And so they'll have a meal, which, not very surprising to us. What happens at Passover? They eat. And we miss that detail when we read through the events of Jesus' life because we go straight to the take this and eat, this is my body, take this and drink, this is my blood. we forget that all this happened after the meal. So even today, after the meal, Jesus stripped off his outer garment, dressed himself in a towel, and began to wash the disciples' feet. He didn't begin the third part. He's re-envisioning the second part, that the meal is now connected with the washing of the feet, and then they take this and eat, this is my body and blood. So what do we learn from this? What's so surprising? What's surprising is that he's changing the Passover celebration. And he's changing it to do something to his disciples, and namely do something to us. He's giving us an example, something to follow. He, the God of all creation, the one who is beyond imagining, beyond all things, became a human. He, beyond all imagining, became a baby. And in this case, he's washing the disciples' feet. Now, this is not lost on us. Feet are gross. Most people do not want to touch each other's feet. Not unless they've been washed or cleaned or like pedicure or something to make them a little bit more palatable. In the same way, in Jewish history, they would wash feet as they entered, but only the servants would do that. So Jesus washing the disciples' feet was kind of a slap in the face of his majesty. But that shows us something. We as Christians, who he's calling out, said if we want to be like our master, who is Jesus, we should not be afraid to go out and serve people. To show the fact that Jesus has done so much for us, that we ought to do something in return. We ought to be like him, taking a low place, taking a place of servanthood, recognizing that even dirty tasks aren't that big of a deal. But that there's so much more to it than that. Because Peter's response is something that's very strange to us too. Why didn't he just let it happen? Because he knows this is weird. But he also knows that he wants such a deep level of inheritance with Jesus that whatever it takes, he's willing to do it. But this also shows us the washing of the feet and what's connected next is our inheritance. To have a part with Jesus, we have to do something. We become something. This moment, when he washes the disciples' feet, is the moment they become priests like him. So that instead of just offering sacrifices from this point forward, they perpetuate it. They continue to tell the story. They continue to make present Jesus in a very, very tangible way in the bread and wine, the body and blood of Jesus. They make sure that the memory of Jesus is not lost, but we remember it time and time again for all history, as St. Paul tells us in our letter to the Corinthians. But then we have to bridge it. We can't stop there, because Jesus didn't. How the events actually unfolded, I'm not entirely sure. But he ate the meal, then he washed the disciples' feet, and then he did something very odd. What should have happened next was the third part of the Passover meal. He should have drained the second cup, filled it again for the third cup, in which they would have then eaten the Passover lamb with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. That's part of Passover. Now, in order to become part of Passover, in order to fully celebrate it, everyone has to eat this sacrificial lamb. And there has to be none of it left over. So eat till you're full or finish the lamb. You have no other options. The lamb has to be eaten. And if you don't eat the lamb, as Moses says 5 times in the book of Exodus, you have no part in Jewish history. You are cut off from the people. This was important. Yet, it didn't happen. Weird. No, it's not weird. The bread becomes the lamb. Jesus is the lamb. So we connect all those things strongly together. The bread is the lamb that was sacrificed, Jesus the sacrifice. The bread is Jesus. The blood, which we shouldn't have drank if we were good Jews, because that's gross, is now Jesus' blood. So that we have the blood of the Passover, marking our lips too, showing that we have part with Jesus. We have the bread that becomes a sacrifice, joining us with it, so that we can become part of what Jesus did. We can get the graces. We can become part of it. But there's a problem here. Jesus gave everything. What does he require in return? What were the disciples' response? It's very simple. What do I do? What do I do with all this? The answer is simple. We give back. Jesus gave us everything. He gave us his entire life, all the graces and benefits of heaven. And here we stand going, what do we do in return? Do I give time? If we recall the gospel from Palm Sunday, Jesus demands from his disciples, can you spend an hour with me? Are you willing to spend time with me? That's giving of ourselves. We can give our talents, gifts, we can give things. But really what's demanded is a return for a return. If I were to give my friend a gift and say, here you go, have my gift. An obligation, the friend would think, oh, now I have to get them a gift. Maybe it's not quite so strong anymore. But it used to be that we'd kind of want to exchange gifts back and forth to feel like we're actually friends. I care enough about you to get you something at least comparable in return. So not the same mentality we should share here. Jesus gave his full self. What's our only response? To give our full selves to him. Because he gave us everything. And now we have everything he had. We have inheritance. We have a part with him. So this is where we're stuck. Although we don't get to watch all the events unfold because of COVID, although everything may seem shrouded in history and mysticism, the reality is the spiritual realities are still present to us. We are called to give ourselves. We have a part with this. And this is where we stand. What am I going to give Jesus in return?